The Parents Show on Mix 92.6. Sponsored by Raiden Solicitors. Award-winning specialist family lawyers. See raidensolicitors.co.uk.
Welcome to The Parents Show on Mix 92.6. Thanks, as always, to Aline and Elise for a great show. Tonight, Neil will be speaking to Rob Cox from the Happy Days charity, based in Hitchin, who provide activities for children who are either suffering from a medical condition or have other challenges in their life, such as being a carer for a parent, or who are grieving a loss, for example. First, though, it was Safer Internet Day recently, and Lydia caught up with Olivier Cobergs from TextGain. Based in Belgium, TextGain use AI to find and flag problems with all sorts of internet issues, such as fake news, hate speech and general harmful content. Olivia guides Lydia through some of the things parents can do to help protect their children be safer online and in the world in general.
Hello and welcome to the Parents Show on Mix 92.6. I'm Lydia El-Khoury. And today we're talking about an event that you might have heard of called Safer Internet Day. It took place on the 6th of February 2024, and it generally always takes place in February each year. And in fact, if you haven't heard about it, you may be surprised to hear that it's actually been going for around 20 years, so quite some time. And the main goal of Safer Internet Day is to raise awareness for a safer and better internet for everybody, but especially children and young people. And that's why we wanted to cover it on the Parents Show this evening. So to dig deep into the subject, we've invited Olivier Cobergs from TextGain Academy to join us and talk to us about Safer Internet Day and what exactly it involves. So, Olivier, thanks a million for joining us on The Parents Show.
Hi, Lydia. Thank you so much for having me. My name is Olivier Cobergs, and I am a researcher at TextGain, which is a company specializing in the development of artificial intelligence to monitor online disinformation, polarization, and hate speech, of course.
Great. So parents listening and carers listening in are probably, they probably hear AI, the word artificial intelligence and AI, and I don't think the association is generally that positive. It's generally a bit of a negative association. So how can it be used for good?
That's true. Artificial intelligence has not a very good reputation nowadays, but we use this artificial intelligence to go online and look on social media how people talk about certain topics. And in our case, we focus on the problems in society. So we focus on disinformation, how to detect it, who talks about it, and in which way. And the same, we do the same for polarization and also hate speech. So we use the AI to protect people, to detect and understand how this happens online.
That is, that's fantastic news for any parents listening in, that AI can actually be a force for good. So talk to us about Safer Internet Day. What's the idea behind it?
So Safer Internet Day is an initiative of the EU. And like you mentioned, it already started in 2004. And it actually has grown beyond the geographical zone of the EU. And Safer Internet Day is now celebrated in 180 countries, so much wider than the EU. And the goal of this initiative is to raise awareness of the emerging online issues such as cyberbullying and hate speech. And every participant chooses how they want to contribute. And TextGain has chosen to contribute by offering free webinars about the latest trends that we have detected in online hate speech. And we offer these webinars to professionals.
So, I mean, I think the problem with social media and parenting is we've a lot of jobs to do, and understanding the nuances of setting your privacy settings or what is safe online, what's not safe online is another big job. And we probably, some of us feel a little bit alienated from it and probably don't do a great job at checking out what we should know and what we shouldn't know. But can you tell us, why should parents care about this on a day-to-day level, about internet safety? And what should we draw their attention to when it comes to online safety?
Parents shouldn't really care about Safer Internet Day by itself, but they should really care about this topic 365 days a year. It is just like you care about the safety of your children when they walk to school in the morning. However, parents, if they are not aware of the dangers online, then Safer Internet Day is a perfect occasion to raise their awareness on this topic, because it is really important.
And awareness is being raised. We're hearing about it in the news every day about the harm that can come from children being online. Can you talk to us about your concerns in particular for young people and children who are online?
Well, my biggest concern today is actually not related to the harms of children being online, but the fact that a lot of parents don't really know what their children are doing online. When I give a presentation, a lot of people give the feedback that they don't really understand the online world, or we don't really know what kids are doing online. And to me, that's the equivalent of leaving your kids in the center of London without any information, how to get home, and trusting them to make it home safely. And I'm really confident that if we raise awareness of these dangers, like pickpockets in the metro, or giving them a map to go home, to get home, the chances will drop significantly that something will happen to them. And the same goes for the internet. If we warn children what they can be confronted with, for example, disinformation, the chances are less likely that they will fall for it. So if we also raise awareness within children of what can happen online, they will be much safer because they are smarter than we think.
And they also can navigate the tech, I think, probably a lot more effectively than we can. So that's great help. Of course, like you need a roadmap. It's a complicated issue. It's like social media isn't just about cat photos. There's more to it. And helping your children to navigate the harms that they may come across is so important. As you say, they need a roadmap. And when we're talking about children being online, what exactly do we mean by being online? How can that manifest itself?
Being online is a very broad concept. It starts from the moment you pick up your phone, your tablet, or you start your computer. Because when we talk about online safety, most people only think about social media, but it goes much further. If we think about disinformation, we talk about websites, but also social media, of course. When we talk about media and literacy in general, we just talk about everything we do online, from websites to social media to just basically everything that we do from the moment we connect online.
Great. Thank you. Thanks, Olivier. So now we all know, or we should know at least, that legally children are not supposed to be on social media apps before the age of 13. We know that they are actually on social media apps before the age of 13. And can you tell us why the age limits are there and why should parents respect them? Does it really make a difference if your child is 11 or 12? You think, you know, they watch 15 movies when they're 13, you know, can it be that harmful, really?
Educating children how to go online in a safe way is something we should already start at maybe age 6. But social media is something very specific. And I would even say that children should wait a bit longer than 13 years old. Maybe 14, maybe even 15 or 16. I know teenagers will really not like to hear this. But I also think on top of that, I think they should first start with apps and websites or social media in general, where they are less likely to be confronted with cyberbullying or upsetting content. Like platforms like Pinterest are a very good start, where they basically see photos, IDs for crafts, or the blog of a friend. We should never forget that online incidents also have offline consequences. So you can't undo the trauma of severe online bullying or watching an extremely violent video of someone being beaten up at a very young age. So we can't fix those problems once you've seen it.
So you're saying definitely better to be safe than sorry, and leave it.
Absolutely.
And leave it as long as possible before getting social media apps.
Maybe not as long as possible, because you also don't want your child to feel being left out because all the classmates or all the friends are discussing something online. So I don't think we should forbid it, because then, of course, they will definitely do it behind our back. But I think we should also make them aware of all the dangers that there are online and educate them in alternatives, like the app that I mentioned, Pinterest, or the blog of a friend.
Brilliant. Thanks, Olivia. That's really helpful. And do you think that being online is ever completely safe?
I really wish I could say yes, just the way I'd hope that the world could be a safe place for everyone and everywhere. But the reality is, unfortunately, that the online world is just an extension of the offline world, and therefore we will never achieve 100% security. But it doesn't mean that we can't do the maximum to protect ourselves and our children when we go online, just like I have taught my children to look left and right before they cross the streets, or right and left for the children of your listeners.
Brilliant. That, I mean, you're absolutely right. We just have to translate the online world into the rules we use for our offline world as well, because as you say, they translate back and forth into each other, and I suppose really that's a bridge that we're all probably struggling to make between the two worlds. And the sooner we see that there are consequences in both for ourselves and for our children, the quicker we'll get up to speed with informing our kids.
Yeah, and it's very interesting that you say both worlds. I mean, I also use online and offline, but for children of like teenagers nowadays, they don't make the distinction anymore between the online and the offline world. Their online friends are real friends, where for us, online and offline are two separate identities, and people we know from online or social media are not real friends like they are to youngsters. So when we translate this to the world of the youngsters, teenagers in general, we should keep in mind that there is no such thing as an online and offline world, but it's just one world.
It's funny when you say that, actually, that makes complete sense. Because when I think about when I talk to my son when he's on his Xbox, I mean, when he's meeting his friends, for him, there's absolutely no difference between meeting them to play Fortnite or meeting them in a park around the corner. He really feels like it's the same thing. So on the topic of gaming, does that fall into the same kind of online activity as social media? Does it pose the same dangers, or more dangers, fewer dangers? What do you think?
Well, we can basically say that online gaming is a form of social media. It means that some platforms, and that translated to games, some games are much more vulnerable to hate speech and cyberbullying. But I think it's very important to get to know what children are doing. Don't let your kid be locked up in his or her room for several hours, 5-6 hours gaming without you knowing what they are actually doing. So I would give everybody the advice to, just like you probably have ever played football with your son or daughter in the park, to game with your son or daughter, or at least watch them doing it. So just sit next to them, play a game, get to know what they are doing, and that way you can also see how they interact with others. And if you see they are playing a game where they are constantly approached by strangers, well, then maybe it's time to have a talk about the dangers of getting into contact with strangers on the internet. But in general, gaming also has a very positive impact on children. It can increase self-esteem, confidence. It can even teach them certain skills. So just like the internet, I think we should emphasize on the positive features of it, but we should not be blind, of course, for the negative impact that it can also have.
Great. Thanks, Olivier. And just before we wrap up now, as a parent yourself, as well as being an expert in hate speech, disinformation and online harms, what would you advise parents who are listening to do about their children's online activities? What tips would you give them?
Yeah, first of all, I would like to emphasize again that the online world is really a wonderful world and brings us so much joy. So that is something that we should really keep in mind. It connects people from all over the world just by one click. In the old days, we needed to wait 3 weeks for a letter to arrive in Australia or United States. And now we can just start a video call with WhatsApp. We can share funny video clips or funny memes on social media, watch YouTube videos, and so on. So the internet is also an excellent educational resource. We can find information on Wikipedia, and in the old days we needed 20 encyclopedias. So we should remember that the positive aspects of the internet definitely outweigh the negatives, and we should also focus on it and educate our children about it. But of course, there are indeed some negatives, and we should be aware of it. So the advice I would give will, of course, depend on the age of the children, because not a 6-year-old should use the internet in a different way than a 16-year-old. But a good general advice would be to be involved in online activities of your children. This doesn't mean you need to spy on them. Absolutely not. You need to respect their privacy, just like you expect your privacy to be respected. So let your children, for example, show you what they like to do online and discover the internet together. Share tips and tricks. Share what you have seen and what you like, and automatically they will do the same. So don't wait and go together with them and explore the internet and social media. And that way you can openly discuss what they do on the internet and how long it's acceptable for your child to use the internet. So open communication about it will be very important, but also discuss and certainly agree how they treat personal information, such as their name, address, and phone number. Not only theirs, but also the information of others, including their parents, because just the way children don't like parents to post photos of them on Facebook, parents don't like it that children share their address online. So encourage your children to be very careful when they share personal information with others online, and also talk about the risks involved if they would do it. And also follow those rules yourself, of course. Give the good example. Children will copy your behavior, and that includes your online behavior. So if you are at the dinner table doom scrolling on social media, your kid will definitely ask why he or she can't watch YouTube during dinner. So set rules, respect them yourselves, and have open communication about their online behavior. And I think that's already a very important step forward.
Brilliant. Thanks a million, Olivier. So Olivier, before we let you go, could I just ask you, are there any resources out there that you'd recommend for parents if they want a bit of extra information about being safe online?
Yes, definitely. I think people should really take a look at betterinternetforkids.eu, which is a website full of resources, not only for parents, but also for children and teenagers, for teachers, organizations, and so on. It's full of information, and I think it would really, really help parents if they would take a look at this.
That's brilliant. Thank you. Thank you so much, Olivier. Really wise words. And we do need to keep the conversation open. You're absolutely right, because it's so easy to feel overwhelmed by social media and online activity and what you're meant to be doing and what you're not meant to be doing, that it's easy just to kind of forget about it, bury your head in the sand. So they're nice, small, easy steps that we can take to make sure that we're keeping an eye on what our children are doing online, and a nice reminder that we should keep an eye on our own activity as well. Brilliant. Olivia, thanks so much for joining us on the Parents Show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Welcome to the Parents Show on Hearts Mix 92.6. Thank you so much for joining us. I'm joined today by Rob Cox. Now, Rob is here from Hertfordshire children's charity Happy Days, and he's going to tell us a bit about their work and maybe how people can get involved as well. I should say, the rain is very heavy, so it's possible you might even hear a bit of rain on the studio roof during this conversation, but hopefully that won't be too painful. So, Rob, thank you so much for joining us here on The Parents Show. Can you tell us a bit about yourself and also about Happy Days and how it kind of supports local children and families?
Yeah, of course. So thank you for inviting me on today. It's absolutely brilliant to be here. So Happy Days Children's Charity. So we've been running since 1992. So we've been around for a little while. We may not be the biggest or the most well-known charity, but essentially what we do is that we help any children going through difficulties in their lives to have special days. So it's a really broad range of children that we help, and it's a really broad range of activities that we do to help them. But generally speaking, it's what we would say, we help children that have mental, physical or emotional challenges. So that can be children going through through medical care. So that might be things like cancer care or treatment for heart defects. It can be children that have learning difficulties. So those would be things like autism, global development delay. It's children that have physical challenges. So that might be children that have mobility issues, or it might be children that have sight impairment or hearing impairments. But as well as children that, if you were to meet them, you'd probably realize they were coping with extra challenges in their lives. We also help a lot of children that are going through other difficulties. So these might be children that are in some sort of counseling. So it might be kids that have lost maybe mum or a dad or a brother or a sister. It's children in the care system. So that would be things like women's refuges. And it's also young carers who are a bit of unsung heroes in society. These are kids that are looking after a mum or a dad or a brother or a sister who themselves have a problem that they're dealing with. And so they're stepping in at the end of the day once they finish school, once they've done their homework. They might be doing things like cooking or cleaning and really keeping that household moving and supporting the household. So we step in and we give them special activities.
That's absolutely lovely. And it makes complete sense as well, because I guess there's a lot of, well, I guess there's some other support for the more serious elements of these kids, like the medical support they need and like the physio and all this kind of thing. But actually getting them to be a kid and having fun is probably one of the most important things. So what are some of the kind of activities that you guys do?
Yeah, so certainly what we're trying to do, as you say, is to really complement some of the support that they're getting, whether that be medical, whether that be psychological. So we're really stepping in to support them with their mental health and with their well-being. And the sorts of activities that we do are really, really broad, Neil, to be honest. I could probably talk about it for the entire show, but a few examples, things like trips to theatres, trips to farm parks, theme parks. It might be a day out to something like rock climbing, horse riding, kayaking, things like sport activities, sport venues. And basically what we do is that we will work with different groups in order to facilitate these trips, which I think most people realize it's a nice day out for the kids and it's helping them. But actually, it's a really broad range of things that it supports those children with. It's about them having fun, but also it's about them meeting new people. It's about them trying things that they might not think that they could do. So removing the barriers there. So for instance, if you're a child that's wheelchair bound, you might not think that you can go zip lining. But we put in the support, we put in the, we organise the days, and we fund those days, really to get kids out, to try new things, to teach them new skills, and to really, it's all about, at the end of it, really, Neil, it's all about helping them to build confidence and overcome challenges that they might otherwise do. And that's all about supporting them, and as I say, about building their confidence, not just now, but for the long term.
That makes so much sense, because, you know, getting confidence to a kid is challenging enough. And I'd imagine if you've got extra challenges to overcome, that's even trickier. I mean, the activities sound great. Do you ever get to go with them? I know you're busy kind of helping run the charity. Do you ever get to do some of this stuff yourself?
I don't normally get to actually do many of the activities, but I do try and get out and go along on days to actually see how it impacts the children. And it can be really quite profound at times, actually. It's as I said, I think people realise it's a fun day, but actually the impacts on their lives can be quite astonishing. And for something that's really only one day, you wouldn't necessarily expect that.
I mean, it just sounds so important. I mean, I imagine with kind of cost of living and all the different stuff at the moment, there's probably a few challenges running a kind of smaller local charity at the moment. You know, is it a tough time for you guys? How are you finding that sort of thing?
Yeah, so what I probably should have said at the start is that although we are based locally, we have the one office up in Hitchin, we actually work right the way across the UK. So we help out in every county across the UK. And as a charity, although we're not a huge organisation, there's actually only 8 staff here. Last year, we were actually able to support 33,000 kids across the UK. And the reason we're able to do that is that we have huge, huge numbers of volunteers who will step in and support the kids on their activities. So, for instance, we support more than 650 special educational needs schools, just around sort of Hertfordshire alone, places like St Luke's in Redbourne, Batchwood School in St Albans, Watling View in St Albans, College School in Hemel, where else? Garston Manor in Watford. Goodness me, I'm not sure. Pinewood School in Ware, Lonsdale School in Stevenage. Again, I think there's probably 30-plus support groups and SEND schools in Hertfordshire alone. And so, yeah, it's you know, it is a huge number of schools we support. And we're very lucky in the fact that we do have those volunteers. And actually, that's one of the ways that helps keep our costs down. But not only is it great that you know we're not using our funding for carers as such and for people going on the activities with the children, but also it's really important that if the kids are going out doing something new, trying a new challenge, where, you know, let's face it, if any of us go and do something new, it can be a little bit worrying, or, you know, going to a group for the first time, we might feel a little bit uneasy and we don't necessarily know people there. But if the kids have got their teachers with them, if they've got their social workers with them, if they've got their care staff that go along with them, then actually it's someone that knows them. It's someone that they, you know, if they need a time out or if they need a toilet break or if they get a bit overwhelmed, there are people there that they know and they feel comfortable with. So we're very, very volunteer led. And I haven't actually looked how many volunteers we have, but it would be into the thousands for sure that will give up a few hours of their time to accompany the kids. So that in itself helps keep our costs down. And the benefit of having someone they know there with them is also really, really key. But yeah, challenges at the moment for sure with the cost of living. As a charity that maybe isn't that well known and doesn't have a huge profile, then obviously spreading the word about what we do and encouraging people to come forward and support our work with fundraising or with offers of activities that they can provide for free, then that's really, really important at the moment. And actually, we've always been based in the area for all of our history. We've kind of flipped between Bedfordshire and Hertfordshire and back to Bedfordshire and back to Hertfordshire. But actually, I have to say that the people in Hertfordshire are absolutely fantastic in supporting us. And we've got some great local people that do challenges. We've got some great local companies that organise fundraisers. And that's really key for us being able to secure that funding, especially with the difficulties, I would say, over the last few years, firstly COVID and then cost of living.
Yeah, we're a very good bunch here at Hertfordshire. If somebody was listening, I mean, are you actively on the lookout for volunteers? You know, is it something that people could get involved with if they fancied giving up a bit of time?
So, because of the issues around child protection, because of the issues around checks, we can't always facilitate volunteers to actually come along on the activities that we do. We do where we can when we have sort of businesses that have supported us and worked with us. We actually do quite a lot of volunteering days for local businesses and actually national businesses as well, where we'll try and organise an activity at the school for the business. So we get a lot of companies and organisations that like to do volunteering days and like to give up some time. It's good for the team, it's good for the business to come and do something, to use that day that often people are given to go and do some good in the community. So what we tend to do is that we'll contact the groups that we work with and we support, and we'll often do activities at schools. So just giving you a few examples of things we've done in the last few months, we had a team come in and help demolish a shed at a local SEND school, and they actually helped build a greenhouse so the kids could start growing some of their own plants. I was down in Brighton last year. There was a school there that wanted to do hedgehog houses, which is unusual. So we had about 10, 15 people from a company come down to that and help build hedgehog houses. We've had tree planting. There's a wonderful school in Dunstable called Weatherfield. And I don't know if any of your listeners would know, but they actually have a bit of a farm out the back. So they've got llamas and they've got chickens. And it's a bit of a surprise, to be honest, when you turn up and you find all those animals. But again, we had, I think it was M&S in St. Albans came along to that and helped build fences and helped repair things. So, as well as doing the activities that we do, what we try to do is that once those companies have kind of funded activities, once they've helped us send the kids for a day out, we try and get the companies and the staff to come into the school that they've helped and actually do something practical on site as well. So they get to meet the kids, they get to do something fun and practical, and it's a really great team building day. And I have to say, the kids absolutely love it. They love having people there. And I think quite often we get staff come along not necessarily knowing what they're going to see and what they're going to, you know, the challenges that they're going to face. And they're normally being pulled out of the shirts by kids and hugged and asked questions. And it's really lovely. So I guess in terms of volunteering, that's more the kind of volunteering that we do. It tends to be with small business groups. For individuals that volunteer, it is a bit more tricky because, as I mentioned before, we try to organise activities where staff that know children go along. For people though, in terms of fundraising, then that's really a great way that they can get involved.
That's such a good idea, the kind of business away days thing. Like, I know you don't need me to tell you that, you know it's a good idea, but that's such a good idea and kind of everybody wins, right? So yeah, definitely any small business listening, I know a lot of small business in the area have Mix on during the day, so do have a look at Happy Days. I'm sure you can get a few more willing recruits from this. So Rob, something you did mention, and I can completely imagine this, you mentioned how kind of rewarding and often, you know, sometimes a bit profound it was. You know, not to put you on the spot, but have you got a kind of personal, particularly rewarding experience that, you know, you've had since you got involved with Happy Days?
Oh, my goodness, there are so many. I mean, a lot of the time, Neil, I spend in the office and I don't always get to go out, to be honest with you. But as I said, it tends to be when we do the volunteer days, I tend to go along to those because it's, you know, make sure everyone's looked after and everything sorted out. And it tends to be then that the people that we've helped, whether that's teachers or support workers, tend to come up and speak to me about things. And I did have, it was last year, we were building a sensory garden up at a school called Romansfield up in Milton Keynes, which is a really lovely small school. We took all of the staff that came along to volunteer for school dinner, which for them was absolutely brilliant. I think like most of us, I certainly hadn't been for a school dinner in many years. And actually, it's something now that we try to do as standard is that, you know, in the middle of the day, rather than people having their lunch, you know, sort of in a cubicle or in a classroom or going out for lunch, we actually say, you know, come along, have school dinner with the kids. And so that's always fun and chaos. But a teacher came up to me and he was telling me a story about a child that he had in his class. And he actually came up, he said, "You Rob from Happy Days?" And I said, I am. And he said, I had to stop you. I've got to tell you a story. He said, "I don't know if you remember, but a few months ago, you organised a trip for a class of our children to Harry Potter World." And I remembered this. I remembered seeing it. And he said, he was telling me that there was one child in his class. He'd only quite recently joined and he was really struggling to fit in. And he had some learning challenges that he was dealing with. But more than anything else, I think he was struggling with the social aspect. And he said to me, "You know, all kids that come to this school, we do our best for, and we try to look after them. But there are always children that you know aren't necessarily going to stick with it. They either struggle too much, and for them, I think if ever that happens and the children don't end up staying at the school, they always feel, you know, personally very." Very affected by that because in their eyes it's a failure on their part. And he was saying to me, "We had this child, he was really struggling, and we were doing the trip to Harry Potter World, and his mum was quite concerned. She didn't necessarily know that he would be able to do it. He hadn't really got any friends in the classroom, and also what had been happening in the weeks is that he'd been missing school more and more and more. First it was one day, then a couple of months later it was 2 days. And the teacher said to me, we kind of saw the path he was on and we thought we were going to lose him. We thought we weren't going to be able to help him and he was going to leave and that would have been awful." So the teacher said to the mum, "Look, we know there's some issues going on. And we know you might be worried about him coming along because he doesn't feel like he fits in. But how about you do this? We'll take the class with us. You drive him separately and meet us there and wait in the car park, in your car. And if there's any problems, he can leave and he can get in the car and you can take him home." So that was all solved. The mum was happy. Everyone was happy. And what actually ended up happening, Neil, the teacher said to me, "We went there, and as soon as we went in, it was really odd because all the children's mindsets changed. They went into this building, and suddenly they started to sort of form together because they were somewhere unusual, because they were somewhere different. They weren't in their normal environment. They started to sort of form together a bit like a pack of wolves." And the good news was is that maybe not for his mum ended up waiting in the car park for an hour. Her son went round, and at the end of that trip, he said he came out, he'd got two new friends, and those friends stuck with him. And after that, he was in school every single day. And he said to me, "I know people don't always understand. People think it sometimes it's just fun and it's a nice day out. But for that child, that has absolutely changed the trajectory of his life. He is now back in school. He likes coming to school. He's got two brilliant friends and it's completely changed his life." So that for me recently was one of the most amazing stories that I'd heard. And it's really nice to be able to share that one actually.
That's incredible. And completely, you know, I don't think it's too much exaggeration to say that that's a kind of pivotal moment for him. So literally, you know, he's kind of pivoting. That's changed his young life a little bit. That's fantastic. That's so good.
Yeah, that's. As the teacher said, that's completely changed his future. And as much as we could do, we didn't anticipate that, and we didn't know that it would have that much of a profound effect. But that's completely changed that young lad's life, and he's in school and he's doing well. And his future could have been so much different if that hadn't have happened.
Incredible, absolutely incredible. The magic of Harry Potter.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, Rob, we're coming towards the end of our interview, but what's coming up for Happy Days? What have you guys got planned in the near future? Anything exciting?
Yeah, well, I mean, we're always doing exciting things and there's always exciting activities going on. And we're always super busy, to be honest. But one thing that's really great at the moment is that we've launched a kind of new campaign, which is called Out and About Hertfordshire. Because we're in Hertfordshire, because we're based in Hertfordshire, this is something that we thought we'd start on our doorstep. But effectively, what we're trying to do is that we're encouraging local businesses to provide funding to support children at local schools, so Hertfordshire schools and Hertfordshire businesses. But importantly, as well, to organise shorter day trips to Hertfordshire leisure facilities. So effectively, what we're trying to do is to somewhat combat the effect of the cost of living crisis by organising shorter, smaller neighbourhood activities, which cost less, but it means we can continue to help the same amount, even more children. And of course, the other benefit is that, you know, if we're taking, I don't know, a group of children from the Valley School in Stevenage and they're going to Manchester for the day, if children do have special educational needs, if they do have challenges, often that can be quite concerning for parents. And often overcoming the challenges of parents and their concerns is almost as much as overcoming the challenge of the children going somewhere new. But by doing something really local, by doing something really close by, then actually that means that might be a 10-15 minute drive away if the parents are concerned. So having their children quite close by. So it's really great in that it's local businesses knowing that they're helping local kids. But also, it's that key bit as well of going to local activities. So if anyone listening to the show knows any farm parks, I don't think there are any theme parks in Hertfordshire, but I could be wrong, animal parks, any kind of activity where those businesses would like to get involved, then we would absolutely love to hear from them. And I think the key part of this as well is that we organise these days out, we fund these days out, so those farm parks, animal parks, canoeing, rock climbing clubs, whatever they might be, don't just get extra business and extra people coming to them, but also by working with us, there's some really nice stories around that we can use, which is great for them in terms of spreading word about working with us. And it's great for us because it gets the word out about Happy Days Children's Charity.
That's great. So there you go. If you're a local business and you could potentially host one of these days, please do let Happy Days know. That brings us nicely on to my last question, Rob. Where can people get in touch with you guys and how can they find out more about Happy Days?
Okay, so the easiest way is just to type Happy Days Children's Charity into Google, to be honest, and we'll come up. As I said, we're based up in Hitchin. Please feel free to pick up the phone and give me a call anytime. I love to hear from people. We love chatting with people. I think whenever we engage with businesses who are fundraising for us, whenever we're talking with parents, the really important thing is that we build a relationship. And as I mentioned to you before, it's not just about making a donation and getting a certificate. If you'd like to get in touch with us, if you'd like to facilitate those days at schools or to come along and see. And also, if you'd like to actually see what projects that we're currently trying to fund and you'd like to put your money towards one of those projects, we actually give you that choice. So yeah, you know, if there's something close to you, if you're a rock climber, if you're a cyclist, and you say, do you know what, I'd really like to organise a fundraiser, or I'd like to make a donation, and I'd love it to help children in a Hertfordshire school to do rock climbing themselves, then we love to do that. Similarly, if you phone us up from Hertfordshire and you say, I'm from Edinburgh originally, we'd like to help kids up there, we do that as well. So we really like to sort of work with people build that relationship and actually give people a choice over how their funding helps. And at the end of that, we'll show you photos, we'll send you thank you cards from the kids, so you can always see not only where your money goes to, but also very directly how it helps and the difference it makes.
That's great. Thank you so much. So people need to Google Happy Days Children's Charity. If you just Google Happy Days, you'll get a picture of the funds. So Happy Days Children's Charity, then you will get all the information you need. Rob, thank you so much for talking to us today. What people listening won't know is I got a sense when we were trying to raise this of just how much of a busy man you are and how much time you're putting into Happy Days. So I really appreciate you carving out the time to chat to us. Thank you so much for joining us on The Parent Show.
You are very welcome. I have absolutely loved it. Thanks so much.
Brilliant. Thank you, Rob.